Thank you, Romain. Thank you, everyone, for coming. We'll try to recreate the Friday night setting without the appear of the Shabbos. Maybe that should be the first Shabbos. Can you do that? That one to do. I think we'll start with the Inyan Idiyah, and that's Beinah Tzarim now. It's usually the time that we get to have a visit from Halal of Yeshiva. And, we are here beside Ma'arev. And a lot of times people want to know what can we do here in our own Avodas to better feel the Hurban, to better prepare for the Beinah Tzarim, for Tisha B'Av, what we're supposed to be feeling, but the Avoda of Tzipis Yeshua in general. We'll start with the Rav.
I would think to reflect on, to remind ourselves to read the history, look through the kinos, look at the events that took place at that time. And I think by being aware of what's happening now, to see the events that are taking place today in the framework of what took place then, and to, I think it's very helpful. I know it's halachically, but I think it's very important we see we're in such a bad matzah as far as we're concerned, as far as the physical matzah especially, and to realize that what happened 9 months ago was just, we were so shocked and so upset about it and so distraught about it, and because 1,200 yidden were killed and taken captive, and to realize that when the Hurban Bayis took place, there's more than 1,200 yidden, there's thousands. Thousands of yidden were killed, thousands of yidden were taken into captivity, thousands of yidden were taken into slavery, and there was no hostages and no negotiations. There was nothing we could do about it. That was the result of that Hurban. And to remind ourselves of that, when we think about it, we can understand perhaps a little better now if what's happening today, that it was worse then, and it can remind us what it feels like, what actually took place at that time.
Just to add, I think that one of the challenges that we have in understanding what this time period is about is a result of the fact that we have in a sense, a tremendous chesed from the Rabbanu Shel Olam, that we live in a country where we have a sense of feeling secure, feeling comfortable, feeling accepted, that it's a challenge for us to remember and recognize that we really are in Golus, and we really are not secure because of the Umas HaOlam. We really don't have the Shmira outside of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And that really what we're lacking is something so basic and fundamental, that as much as living in Golus, one can adapt and adjust and become accustomed and even feel that there's nothing missing, as Chazal referred to this as an Avelus Yishana, because it's almost like we have no frame of reference. So as Rabbi Cook mentioned, to some degree, we sometimes allow ourselves to fall into this trap of feeling that sense of everything is the way it's supposed to be. I remember that Rav Shiva Rav Ruderman mentioned that he remembered Yidden saying Kinnos, and they're tearing out the pages as they said them because they couldn't imagine needing them the following year. Things in Europe were so difficult. There were so many tsaras and so many difficulties. They couldn't imagine that in a year from that Tisha B'Av, they would still be in Golus. They couldn't imagine that there wouldn't be a Geula because things were so terrible. And as I said, it's a chesed from the Rabbanu Shel Olam that he allows us to live in a place that we don't have that type those type of conditions. We don't have those type of tsarais. But it comes with this challenge that we can look at things that this is the way it's supposed to be and things are perfect and nothing has to really change. And sometimes when things come up, like we're experiencing right now, our thoughts really are, we would like things to just normalize again. But the reality is that it's really trying to tell us that things are not normal even before this. It's part of what we have to internalize, that we are living without the madrega Klal Yisrael should be at. We don't have the level Kedusha that we're shayach to. I think part of our thought process has to be that it's the area of Kedusha that Klal Yisrael has become weak in, and we lose Kedusha when we're not holding at a madrega of Kedusha. We lose the Beis HaMikdash, we lose all that comes with it. We're not worthy to have Kedusha, and the area of our weakness is going to be in Kedusha.
So I think both of you touched upon one of the topics that was definitely going to be brought up tonight, which is the matzav right now being different than even a year ago, maybe 10 years ago or 20 years ago. For those of us that are raising children, you know, we live in a community where we've had instances here, I don't know, through the Yastam of the event, where my idea turned in, there was an incident just outside the shul, and other instances in California, all over America. And how should we be talking to our children about it? Obviously, there's older children, yeshiva bachur, and they're maybe more knowledgeable. But for it seems that kids today know a lot more than they probably should, and they hear about things. How do you balance living in the reality and also not making them scared and not making a bigger deal than maybe needs to be for their particular growth?
We'll speak and I'll think.
No, I want the opportunity to
do the alternate.
Okay. It's certainly true a person has to be careful to know what his children are mature enough to be able to deal with. You don't want to create a sense of fright and panic that can overwhelm children. Certainly the fear of the unknown, because their imagination can run wild, so you have to be careful with children. In the reality, I don't know if children really can have a full appreciation of what Golus really means. From a practical standpoint, there's simply a matter of being careful. That's a matter more of, we'll call it security and the being reasonable in one's hanhaga. That in every community, we have a certain level of comfort displaying our being yidden, and we feel that it's accepted by our neighbors. And I'm not sure if it was ever really accepted by our neighbors, but we felt safe, and this has awakened within us that maybe it's not as safe. Again, the balance between scaring children and children realizing that they have to be careful, that's a practical matter. In terms of children being sophisticated enough and mature enough to fully grasp what it means in terms of the hashkafa of it, I think that's probably not negeya. Younger children, a child that's a little bit older, one can speak to them about the fact that we are living as aliens. We are really immigrants, even if we were born here, or our parents were born here, or grandparents were born here. We are immigrants. Our makom is, we are looking forward to being in Eretz Yisrael as the balabatim of Eretz Yisrael. We're looking forward to being in Eretz Yisrael as the makom of Malchus Beis David, with Mashiach. That's our dream. But Kolzman, we have not reached that point where Kadosh Baruch Hu is bringing us back. We have to realize we are not part of this culture. We have to remain separate. I think the Dagesh should be this sense of Klal Yisrael's the Am HaNivchar. We remain separate. And the Ummah Sa'ilam, again, you don't want to frighten them, but we're separate from the Ummah Sa'ilam.
I would concur. I just want to say, there's a difference between scaring them and frightening them, but making them aware. Now, I grew up a few years ago in a different society. When we grew up, we were aware that we're different than the Goyim, and this sort of blending together and imagine we're all good friends together and with our Goyish neighbors, you know, I grew up post the Second World War, but the atmosphere was that this is what Goyim are. You can't trust, you know, however nice the Goy is to you, you have to remember that he's not Jewish and he can turn on you, as it happened so many times in our history. We saw that because it happened in Poland, it happened even when friends and neighbors happened in Hebron, the terrible pogrom took place in Hebron. The Chumran over there, they were their friends for years, but all of a sudden they turned on them. And I think, today, we don't have that feeling. Our children don't have that feeling. We're all friendly together, and we should use what's going on now as an opportunity to point out to them that we don't really have friends, and we should remember that. And will you forgive me for getting political? Or can I still? You know?
Can I hear?
You're speaking.
And we don't. We can. Nobody can we say is our friend. You can have a president who may have done wonderful things, but we've and our history has shown us that the same person can, when it's convenient, can turn exactly the opposite around. We can't rely. There's no such thing. He's good. He's a good person. Have to make a talk. We have to make a talk, but we have to be aware that nobody is our friend. And I think we have to convey that to our children, because our society has become very political, and we have, you know, supporting presidential candidates and who are siding off. And we have to look at them. Like he said, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam is the only one who's going to watch over us. And we've seen also in history, sometimes we thought that the worst enemy for Eretz Yisrael turned out to be a good friend for Eretz Yisrael. George Bush, I think the first George Bush, everybody said he's so in the oil with the Arabs, he's going to be terrible for Israel. He wasn't terrible for Israel. We had a president who we thought was going to be great for Israel, and they turned against us. So we don't really know. We should use the opportunity of what's going on, that to point out to our children that we can't trust, we can't rely on, we have to mark you the chesed that we have in this country, and the peace and tranquility that we live in. But we have to remind them that Goyim are Goyim, and we always have to be on our guard.
So actually a question came in today that some of these responses, you know, make you think about it a little bit more. It is a push for more people to leave America, or leave certain parts of America, to other parts, but more specifically to leave to Eretz Israel. Is that a shiloh now that's a more, you know, nachutz shiloh that we should be entertaining each individual given the matzah right now? Or does it just seem to us like it's different than 2020 to 10 or 20 years ago? Or is it really a bigger shiloh now that we should all be considering? Realizing that we're not in office based on yet, and Eretz Israel is what it is right now, but still.
I don't know that shiloh, which you will hopefully answer. I want to just point out one thing that I think, I don't know anybody has such ideas over here, but I want to just point out that going to Eretz Israel, moving to Eretz Israel, making Aliyah to Israel, what is the situation, what's the family situation? It is virtually impossible to make Aliyah and you have children who are in high school, and for them to adapt and change and make it work, it doesn't work. Because when you think about all the cheshbonos of making Aliyah, you know, in Chas V'Shalom, maybe there's a time you have no choice. But to do that, when you have children, boys and girls, in high school, and now you're going to switch to a Israeli, which is a different culture, different language, different way of doing things, and it really has to be a major consideration before anything else, that what's going to be with our children. That has to be the first consideration. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu admonished the Bnei God Reuven because they wanted to, they said, we'll stay here, we'll make it comfortable for our cattle and our children. They put the cattle first and the children second. Our children have to come first. And before any decision is made, how will it affect them? Is that to find a society, a school that's going to work for them, a machine that's going to work for them, it really is a very, very difficult thing.
I would concur with what Rabbi Cook is saying, that as much as there are cheshbonos for a person to think about leaving America, there are many people who have raised this question before what happened 9 months ago because of the, I'm not sure what to call it, the increase of pritzos or decrease of morals in America. The moral fabric of America is pasha disintegrating. And it's a question that I think as time passes, and I'm a little bit younger than Rabbi Cook, but probably older than most people in the room. Over the years, it's certainly been peiches v'heilech. You always think you hit rock bottom until you wait a little bit longer and then you realize the bottom is a little bit lower. That's also a ma'ir as much as this feeling of being unsettled because of the sinas Yisrael. I'm not even sure which one is more compelling, but I would agree with Rabbi Cook, and I've cautioned people that as much as there's tremendous reason to think about how do we safeguard ourselves, our families, from the exposure of what goes on in this country, but moving is not simple because, as Rabbi Cook has said, everyone has to adjust in addition to a person having to think about his parnasa in Eretz Yisrael. But the bigger challenge possibly is his family adjusting. Eretz Yisrael is a totally different culture. Where am I going to put my children? Where is the family going to be? You can't raise your children in Eretz Yisrael as Americans. If you move to Eretz Yisrael, you have to allow them to become part of that culture. Then you have to realize which track are they going to be on. I can't create a track that fits the way I live in this country. So it's very complicated. So it's true that these are reasons for people to stop and think, but you can't make such a decision impulsively. I would kimat say that if a person was seriously thinking of moving and it made sense before this, then ulai, this could be what the push he needs. But to make a decision because of this without everything else being worked out is, I think, is irresponsible.
Just maybe one last question on the matzah that's in the world in Eretz Yisrael right now. But you know, there's been, Baruch Hashem, there's been a lot of campaigns and kabbalas and things going around since months ago. Are there any particular ones that the Rebbeim have heard about or taken on, or maybe in the yeshiva they've taken on that we out here should know about? There are things that would be things that we should strengthen ourselves in or potentially take on reasonable kabbalas for what's going on in the world, either because of the safety situation or just the deterioration situation.
Whenever there's an Eis Tzara, there are two components. Whenever there's an Eis Tzara, so in Shulchan Aruch it speaks about how people, depending on their proximity to where the Tzara is, how they're supposed to be nayik, to be mishtatif in the Tzara. And there are halachas which are relevant to people that live in the place where the Tzara is, in neighboring places, and then further you don't have as many halachas. However, whenever there's an Eis Tzara, especially affecting the entire Eretz Yisrael, the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, that means there's a Midas Hadin that's nispashit on the Tzibur. If the Midas Hadin has been activated on the Tzibur, and Rabbi Yonason Eifshitz writes that even if a person is able to see Midas Hadin being carried out on people that one would think perhaps are worthy of it, but he writes the Midas Hadin affects everyone, even those who they would think are the Toivim. So everyone is now subject to the Midas Hadin. I think that what we have to be thinking about is that if Klal Yisrael right now is in a matziv, where there is a midas hadin that has been opened up, that's mechayev us to think in those terms. When there's midas hadin, it means there's greater scrutiny. That's what din means, there's judgment. When there's midas hadin, that means that there's greater kitrugim, greater tvias. The hanhaga of the Rabbanu Shalom with midas hadin is different than when there's midas harachim. If one is margish that there's a midas hadin on Klal Yisrael, then the behavior has to be reflective of that. Now, exactly what a person should do, I don't think it's uniform. I think every person has to think himself, if there's a sense of midas hadin, and I can't detach myself, I can't make believe I'm just a spectator, I'm just somebody who's watching from the sidelines, but I'm part of Klal Yisrael. So if midas hadin, what does it say to me? To me it seems, on the most basic level, my davening has to be different. My kavana during davening has to be different. Wherever the area of improvement is, whether it's the kviyas of my davening, whether it's the quality of my davening, davening with a minyan, whatever it may be, but I want to increase the kayach of my tefillah. So what Chazal tell us helps tefillah to be niskaba. Tefillah b'beis haknesses, tefillah b'tzibur, tefillah with kavana. These are the areas a person has to think to himself. What can I do to increase the kayach of my tefillah? Chazal tell us, the Chafetz Chaim wrote more than 100 years ago. This is, you think it's only a modern day phenomena, but the Chafetz Chaim wrote this more than 100 years ago. People are searching for skulas. The Chafetz Chaim writes, Shas is full of skulas. Shas is full of skulas. Just simply read what it says in Shas and Shulchan Aruch. Amen Yeheshme Rabba, the Kavana, Kaddish, answering Kaddish, davening in the Beis HaKnesses, Limud HaTorah, Tzedakah, the basics. That is the most powerful skula that we have. We don't need to look for, I don't know how you say in English, the Reuter Bendel. You don't have to look for these things that look more exotic as skulas. What the meat and potatoes of what Klal Yisrael's existence is our strongest weapon. In a zman of din, we have to, each individual person, keshuva atzmai, makes the judgment. There's no uniform Kabbalah. And even in Kabbalah, I would just simply say, look to increase and improve. Everyone should look at his tefillos, he should look at his, in the kamas and the eichas, he should look at his tzedakah, he should look at his limud haTorah, he should look at his chasodim bin odom haChaveira, his mishpacha and others. All these are schuyos for Klal Yisrael, and I think that's the area. So I can't answer anything about Kabbalah, but I think that's what people should think about.
I agree 100% with the words he's saying. I maybe just be most of one thing, that besides that is a concept of Noisib Olam Chaveru. I know that during the 67 war, Rosh Hashiva, Zayn Tzadik Rocha, spoke about the concept of sharing in the plight of the less fortunate. He mentioned about a Olam Gadol who his chaver was taken and was in prison, and in prison that he was in, there was no light. So this Talmud Chacham, this chaver, didn't use any light in his house during the time that his friend was interred in prison. And I sometimes talk about that in the shuls, that we have to feel that, you know, there's even suffering, and even under terrible things that have happened and are happening, and we have to do something. And in the same vein that Rav Tzvi is saying, that there's no universal world, but each person should feel there's something that can perhaps a little less in my daily behavior, a little less in what I treat myself to. Perhaps if I treat myself a little less to something, to show that I'm sharing in their matzav, and I want to feel what their situation.
On the topic of tefillah, since tefillah is definitely an important part of the previous response, tefillah, as those of us are raising children, young children, or middle-aged children, tefillah is a very personal thing. What are some ways that parents can train to, obviously besides for just davening well yourself, I don't know if you was that Eitza, but in terms of interacting with children in tefillah, whether girls or boys, what are some ways to get children more in tune with davening so that Gam Ki Yaskin, they'll be successful in that?
I don't have an answer to that question, but I want to just bring out another point. I don't want to say unfortunately, the role of a parent in tefillah has become sort of secondary. The ones who are teaching our children tefillah really at the schools.
Yeah.
They daven in the schools. They don't, you know, most fathers, they daven, you know, they go to shul, or they go to, and their children are off to school. They don't go to shul with except on Shabbos. So really that question has to be addressed to the Mechanchim. How the Mechanchim, what are the, and it is addressed by the way, and they are dealing with it, what is the best way to encourage our Talmidim to daven and to daven with Kavanah?
I don't know if this is relevant to younger children, because in order for tefillah to be meaningful, you have to understand what you're saying. I think most of the younger children, that Lashon HaKodesh is not their mama Lashon. They have to learn what it means. It's very difficult for them to find tefillah to be inspiring, certainly in a very broad sense. But I do think that children learn by example. If they see how their parents, we'll say Birkas HaMazon, or they daven from a siddur, and they daven not just rapidly, but they daven, it looks to them like they're concentrating. It gives them at least a dugma of what tefillah is supposed to be. Generally, children, I think, will emulate what they see. They themselves, in their, we'll call it copying the adults that they see, will understand that when you daven slowly, you read slowly. But it's very hard to train them to be inspired. The externals don't really penetrate, that you should shuckle a lot and things like that. But I think that if they just see how the parents daven or bench or something like that, it will leave a roshim of how you're supposed to daven. But eventually, as they grow and they recognize that davening is something that you take seriously, then hopefully they will be in a schana to do that.
You have time for one more? One more. I think having the Rebbeim here, I think we're all, our minds are in the yeshiva, and when we think of yeshiva, we think Limud HaTorah. So most of us that are in either the working world or even if we're in the chinuch world, that our time for our own learning is much less than we were when we were in yeshiva. And I think I speak for hopefully most people that everyone wants to be matzliach and learning on an ongoing basis. And there's a she'ifa to accomplish more and more learning, both on a bikiyas level, whether it's a daf yoimi or an omid yoimi or an araisa program. But at the same time, there's a longing for learning bigiyon and in-depth learning that we don't want to disconnect from. What are some etzos that we can use in our lives to either balance the two or when to know when to push more in one within the other? In terms of learning,
listen to the alumni share every week.
Which is a very good plug. I agree.
I think that everyone would have to seek counsel from either his Rav or his Rebbe to discuss such a question, because every person has different strengths and different set of facts. The only tzadah shoh I would say is, in order for a person to have any hatzlocha in learning, even this is true even in yeshiva, but certainly out of yeshiva, it requires commitment and discipline. The combination of the commitment and discipline is ma'akev. The pratim, I think the person has to really discuss it with someone who knows it, because you will have people who thrive learning with a chavrusa. We'll have those who thrive going to a shir. There'll be those that thrive with one of these programs. Everybody is different. For some, a particular mahalach is is undershooting, one is overshooting, everybody's going to be different. I think that the combination of the commitment and the discipline is what's needed for every person to have. Then he has to hear from his Rebbe or his Rav, what makes the most sense for me. Now, part of the judgment is his strengths, his weaknesses, what's going to hold, what's not going to hold. The objective is, I think, to be holding and learning. If somebody is holding and learning, he'll grow and he'll progress. I don't believe that the way you measure hatzlach and learning is by dafim. I think the way you measure hatzlach and learning is that there's continuity, it's consistent, it's without any hefsik, and when you have learning without a hefsik, there's going to automatically be growth. If the growth will be no learning more dafim, learning more chazaris, more ilan, that's for every person. But I think whatever it is, if the person's holding and learning, he's going to grow.
And one more ingredient, see, say commitment and discipline, and there's a third ingredient. I think the third ingredient is gushmak. He has to be gushmak, and he has to enjoy it, and that he wants to continue and wants to go to that seder, that farusa, that shir, because that's what really will get him going, and then put into play the commitment and discipline.
Thank you very much.